Okay, good evening, everyone. Tonight's topic was chosen because of the Parashas of Shavuot, Parashas Mishpatim, and the topic is the Halachas of Arko Shel Akum, about this, a discussion of the Isser, of the prohibition of a Jew taking a case against another Jew in front of secular courts. And it originates, it's based on the very first pasuk in this parasha, the lashon of the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Perichavav Halacha Zayin, says the Rambam, Kol Hadon Bidine Goyim. Anybody who judges a case in the laws of the Goyim, uva'arko'o shelohem, and in their court system, their judiciary system, af al pi shahayu dinayim kidinei Yisrael, even if they judge like Jews. Now, there's two things. Either one who judges based on the dinim, the law system, the system of jurisprudence, of which is not based on the Torah, or one who goes even to a court where they do use the laws of the Torah, but it's a secular court. Hareze Rasha, the person takes another Jew to such a court is considered a Rasha. Uki'ilu chiref v'heirem yad b'toras Moshe Rabbeinu. Very, very strong Lishonos, as if he's challenging and threatening the Torah. Ki'ilu chiref, as if he's guilty of blasphemy and lifting his hand to strike the whole Torah. Shenemar is the Rambam. This is the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perichavav Halacha Zayin. Shenemar ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tosim lifneihem. These are the mishpatim, the laws that you should place before them. We know, of course, the literal pshat is the Kadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe Rabbeinu, these are the laws that you should place before the Yidden. But Chazal darshan from them asher tosim lifneihem, that they're talking to every Jew who has a legal case, that he has to bring it lifneihem velo lifnei goyim. Lifnehem v'lo lifnei hajotos has to be brought in front of Jewish judges, and at a time when such a thing is possible, it has to be brought in front of davka mumchim and smuchim, and not in front of hajotos, not in front of even within the Jews. It has to be people that are qualified and that have the status of a mumcha, of an expert, of a dayan mumcha and a dayan musma. That's the lashon of the Rambam. Very similar lashon in the Mechaber in the Shulchan Aruch. In Simin Chaf Vav, Sif Aleph, towards the end of Hilchas Dayanim, this short Simin on the laws of our Ka'os. And the Lashon of the Mechaber, Asr Ladim Bifnei Dayanei Akav Arkashalam, is us to have any case in front of non-Jewish judges or in non-Jewish court system. V'chalabali Dem Bifnei Hamareza Rasha, like the Rambam said, Ukilu Chireif V'gideif. And it's learned, the Sma brings is the idea, the Isser is learned from Ve'ela Mishpat Mishar Tassim Lefnei, but the idea that such a thing is considered to be such a blasphemous act and such a horrific and strong act of a rejection of the Torah, as if one is striking down the Torah and attacking the Torah, comes from the Pasuk, which says, Ki lo kitzureinu tzuram, Va'yveinu plilim. Plilim, the word plilim means judges. Kilo kitzurin tzuram, their God is not like ours. Va'yveinu plilim, for Chazal Darshan, kisha ayveinu plilim, when we substitute ourselves to our enemies, meaning the nations of the world, as our plilim, as our judges, zehu edus le'ilu yirasim. That's as if saying that their system, their religion, their laws, and their justice is superior, chas v'shalom, superior to us, because we're rejecting a Jewish court and Jewish system, and we're going to a non-Jewish system or to a non-Jewish judge. So that's saying that the reason you would do that would be if you feel that it's superior, that their laws are whether more logical or more compelling or whatever it may be. So that's striking the Torah. That's an attack against the Torah. The lashon of the Medrash Tanchuma, which the Bir Hagra brings down there, Medrash Tanchuma in Parashas Mishpatim, Shekol Mishem Niach Dayani Yisrael. Anybody who leaves behind the opportunity to go in front of the Yoni Yisrael, v'holich lefnei Akum, kafar b'Kadosh Baruch Hu, tchila. It's first an act of kfira against kafar b'Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's considered an act of kfira, of denial of Hashem. V'achar ken kafar b'Torah. Shenemar, he brings the pot, the Medrash brings the pasuk, kiloki tsurenu tsuram v'venu pelinim. So we see, based on Chazal, it comes from Chazal, and it's written over the halacha, both in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, that going to a non-Jewish court is not just another iser. It would be bad enough if it was. There are a lot of, you know, any lav in the Torah is bad enough, but this lav is a indication of something a lot deeper than simply not complying with a particular thing. Person who not having a suit checked for Shabbos, which is, don't get me wrong, which is terrible, and or knowingly wearing Shabbos, or knowingly doing eating something which is not kosher, or shaving with a razor, whatever it is, any lab is a terrible thing. But it could be an independent, isolated act, or the person, whatever it is, he just feels he can't get a good shave in a kosher manner or something like that. Not that it's an excuse by any means. Not doesn't even begin, but. We don't find the same lashonos derechal that it's not considered necessarily the same type of an attack on the Torah, and the Ramah brings over there v'yesh biyad beisin lenadoso. The beisin has the power, has the right to be to put such a person into nidui, into excommunication, the chayrim lenadoso hachrimu ad sheyesalek yad akum me'al chaverim, until he undoes what he's done, meaning he removes the case from the non-Jewish system.
This is even when both sides wanted, like they agreed.
Yes, we're going to see. Yes, as we'll discuss. This is.
Because if they only decided that for convenience, not because they want to be more in halakha, it's just convenient to go to a.
Yeah, okay, but no, it's even if both sides do it, it's what Chazal are telling us, that what's at the root of it. The root of it is really a rejection of the Torah, and people sometimes come up a lot of excuses why they prefer to do it elsewhere, but the Chazal see in that it's the underlying motivation is a rejection of the Torah, because if a person appreciated the Torah as he should, then he would, just like everything else he does, which is not necessarily the most convenient, but he complies with what the Baruch Hashem requires of him, so he would do it here too, and there are ways to make it work. We'll talk about it a little bit. There are ways to make it work. Yes. We'll look that up. I mean, in the various Monei HaMitzvahs, it's definitely a Doraisa. Is it 613? We have to look in the Monei HaMitzvahs to see, but it's definitely a Doraisa from this pasuk. Yes, it's. Yes, Lifnehem, Lifnei Akum. Correct, that is correct. Okay, to show some further the ramifications or the consequences of doing such a thing, the Kes of Kedushin, which is the Bechatcha Rav, on the Shulchan Aruch there, says that it's considered Me'ein Abizra Davodas Alilim. It's as sort of like a form of Avodah Zara, in this, based on what we said. And he says, till a person does tshuva, he's cannot be counted towards a minion. I mean, a person who, again, who initiates a suit or a case in a non-Jewish court, unless it's within the framework of a possible heter, possible terror that hopefully we'll discuss. But anybody who does it without any heter, in a way, in the standard case, such a person is not included in the minion. Now the Mishnah Berurah writes, and the Mishnah Berurah, you can take a look in the first chalak in Siman Nun Gimel Sivkan Pei Beis. The Mishnah Berurah says that, well, maybe it's gotten to a point where people are so unaware of it, at least he's talking about his times, that maybe it could be considered shogig already, and we wouldn't necessarily say the person is disqualified from counting a minion if indeed he did it b'shogig. But he says certainly he shouldn't be a shlich tzibur on the Yom Ha'aram, etc. He's considered, the b'chatcha continues, I think he's pasul le'edus, in Beis Din or at a chuppah or whatever it may be. Okay, now just to point out, this is all talking about the technical iser is talking about when both parties are Jewish. Meaning, it's not that just the Jew who's bringing who's the the plaintiff who's bringing the case in front of the court, but the defendant, the one who he has his claim against, is also a Jew. If the other party is a non-Jew, then the issue doesn't apply. It does say, even so, if possible, if the non-Jew would be agreeable, would agree to go in front of a Jewish court, then it's a mitzvah to do that as well. But frequently that's not going to be the case, and when it isn't the case, then it is mutter, because the non-Jew is not bound by any of this. So maybe the Jew is allowed to. He's not showing that the non-Jewish system is superior in any way. He's just, since he's dealing with the non-Jew, so the non-Jew says, look, I'm not interested in your system. Okay, now the...
that case where you have a non-Jew who's willing to go to a Jewish court, and you feel like you would win in a non-Jewish court and lose in a Jewish court, and still take him to a non-Jewish court?
You could, and then, yes, then you could. Now, the Chazanish in Hilchas Sanhedrin points out that when we're discussing Arko Shel Goyim, it's not necessarily Goyim, meaning to say even if the particular judge is a Jew. And if a Jewish judge in a non-Jewish system, in a secular system, which is not run by the Torah, doesn't follow Torah law, follows the law system they follow, but not the system of the Torah, even if the judge is a Jew, it makes no difference. And in fact, he writes that it's Hadavar Yoser Maguna, it's even worse to go in front of a Jewish judge in a non-Torah system, because the Jewish judge himself is already doing something of the sort if he's judging two Jews but not a Pidah Torah system. We're not telling them that you don't belong here, you belong in a basin. So he's also a party to the crime, and it makes no difference if everyone in the city, like if that's the rules in the city, those are the laws. So for example, the secular based mishpat in Eretz Yisrael, all these poskim say here, is included in this. There's no going to a regular based mishpat rather than a beis din, what we call a beis din, would be part of the same iser of going to our kol shel goyim. And in fact, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein brings down in one place that he says b'shem Rabbi Cheskel Sarno, who's one of the former Rashi Yeshiva of the Chevron Yeshiva, that wants to say that in front of to go to a Jewish, quote-unquote, system, which is not based on Torah, is something which Beis Din can't even allow, meaning we're going to see later, Hashem, that Beis Din could give a person Rishus under certain defined circumstances, can give a person Rishus to go to a secular court, but it would have, but only a secular court. Beis Din could never allow. Rabbi Cheskel Sarno wants to say that Beis Din could never allow a person to go to a non-Torah system run by Jews. And he brings it that the Rabbi Yashiv didn't agree with that, and we'll see later with Hashem when we see the svara for why it's mutter to send for a Beis Din to send someone to a non-Jewish court. Sometimes then maybe we'll see the makar why Rabbi Yashiv disagree. In any case, so he says, the Chazanish says it makes no difference if the whole city agreed upon this, or it makes no difference if the individuals agreed upon this, etc., etc. Even if they were Makabal Kinyan, the person was Makabal Kinyan with somebody else to go to a non-Jewish court, or they signed a contract, etc., it's all batal mevutal. It's not binding at all. It has no level of anything that a person has to abide by, and it's like he's masna mashakasa b'Torah or nishba lavro Torah, like making a shvuah to go violate the Torah, which is not chal. Now, when two Jews go into a business together, when they go to form a corporation together or any type of business partnership, it is, or even in an employment arrangement, a person becomes an employee of another Jew, it is very, very kedai to have a clause in the employment agreement or the partnership agreement, to have a clause saying that any disputes will be brought, number one, in front of a Beis Din, and best yet that it should say a specific Beis Din, because what happens sometimes is that even if they're both agreeable that they need to bring, if a dispute does arise, which needs to be adjudicated, and they both agree they should go to Beis Din, but if there wasn't an agreement in advance as to which Beis Din, then sometimes things can get delayed, and different tactics can perhaps be used to try to adopt, specifically schlep things out, whatever. If it's agreed upon in advance which Beis Din, then it's and that's in a binding contract, then things are a lot better. So, but for a Jew or a Jewish corporation or for a Jew who's dealing with another Jew to sign a to formulate an agreement to go in front of any other judicial source, whether it's a court system, whether it's a arbitration system that works with a law, you know, a set of laws, but which is not the Torah laws, is us to do. Now, that having been said, if a person finds himself at the other end of the deal, meaning to say, let's say a firm person is taking a job or is trying to develop a partnership with another Jew, and the other Jew is perhaps not observant, and he's not interested. He's not interested in the idea of Beis Din. It's foreign to him, and etc. And he wants the right that we have to go in front of the whatever it is, the local court system, or the arbitration system, whatever it may be. So the Maisa, many say it's not usher for the Jew, for the other Jew who to sign that and to agree to that, because at the end of the day, if a person does bring, if a Yid does bring another Yid, sues another Yid in court, he's allowed to go and defend himself. A person is allowed to defend himself in court. Of course, he should always try to get it out of court and into a Beis Din, but if he can't, he's certainly allowed to go and defend himself in court and hire a lawyer and whatever else he has to do to defend himself. So since he's allowed to do that, so if he's dealing with a non-observant Jew who has no interest whatsoever and cannot be persuaded to agree to a Beis Din system, so then anyway he's going to, at the end of the day, he's gonna he'll anyway bring the, whether he signs it or not, the person will sue him in court, and or even if it's the other way, even if it's the observant Jew who needs to bring the action against the non-observant Jew, but as we'll see there in cases like that anyway, very often Beis Din will allow him to take it. If he can't bring it to a Beis Din, they'll allow him to take it to a non-Jewish court. So many say he would be allowed to sign something like that if he had no choice. But of course an effort should be made. And you know, you never know with these things. You never know when a person might agree, even though it might seem unlikely to you, but you should always broach the idea. Suggest it, recommend it, try to find, try to, whatever it is, to bring him literature or ways of trying to show him that there is a reliable system that he could have confidence in the Jewish Beis Din system, and as I said, pick a specific Beis Din if possible. And you never know when a person might actually agree, even though we found that many areas of life where there's an assumption that the other he's not observant, he doesn't care, he'll never agree, and then if you just ask, sometimes sure enough they do agree. So. But the bottom line is, if they don't, then many permit anyway signing such an agreement.
Contracts often write that they're governed by the laws of the state. Are you allowed to have that lying on a contract?
Well, so again, if it's between two Jews, it shouldn't say that, no, because that's part of the issue. Even if you had being governed by laws other than the laws of,
and not for dispute resolution, but just the laws of the contract are governed by the state. The laws of the state.
Oh, okay, so if you mean just in terms of, I say that it's not dispute resolution, just the question of,
like the meaning of certain words or certain
terms. Oh, yeah.
Terms.
Yes, that's fine. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's fine. If it's not a question of, resolving a dispute, just the question of, like you say, defining how actions, defining that would be okay to do that.
Does it matter if majority shareholders are non-Jewish people and minority shareholders are Jewish, or if the breakup is 49% Jewish, 51% non-Jewish.
Okay, that's a whole topic unto itself about how do we look at a corporation that has Jews and non-Jews, and what determines whether it's a Jewish entity or non-Jewish entity. It's like in so many areas in halacha, legabe only chametz on Pesach, and legabe being open on Shabbat, doing business on Shabbos, and legabe loans with interest, borrowing and lending with interest. Just very often a question of banks and then other lending institutions that have Jews and non-Jews. So that's a discussion. Just in a nutshell, I mean, one of the, typically the way we look at it is that if the people with the if the governing group, the group that really makes all the decisions, are non-Jews, even if there may be many Jews are part of the corporation, but if they don't really have any real clout, any real power, because they're such a minority, and even if they get ballots in the mail to vote on certain policy things, but Reb Moshe writes about that where it's really it has no real meaning to it, and the majority shares are held so strongly by non-Jews that your vote is totally worthless, then we don't look at that as a Jewish corporation in general, and probably would have the same ramifications here. Okay, now, so what happens if Lamaisa, a person, has a situation where he needs to bring another he needs to bring a legal action against another Jew, and that Jew refuses to go to Basin. He's not going to respond to Basin. So the person definitely should first approach Basin, and the Basin will, if it's a regular, organized and let's say call it a full functioning, full service Basin, they will do they'll send a hazmana to the other individual, basically they'll subpoena him, they'll send him a communication saying that he's being an action is being brought against him in their Basin, and he should please contact them so that they can work out a time when he would appear, when they're both able to appear in front of the Basin. And if the person ignores it, typically the system is if the person ignores it, so then it's repeated, and then a third time they send three hazmanas. Sometimes if they have strong reason to believe that the person is not going to be at all interested, and he then does ignore the first hazmana, or maybe even if he doesn't ignore it, but he sends back some sort of threatening letter from his lawyer or something, or whatever it may be. So sometimes they may not go through all the steps of sending three hazmanas. They may suffice it with the one if they get a very, very strong response from the side. And if that happens, then Basin could give a person the rishus, could give a person the permission to take the case to the secular court. If the other side won't come, if he believes that the person owes him money, whatever it may be, and he refuses to come to Basin, then a Basin can give him rishus to go to secular courts. Now the question is, how does that work? And if there's an issur in the Torah to go to secular court, so we know that typically if there's any issur in the Torah, a person has to, a losa say in the Torah, a person has to give up even all his money, not to violate, doesn't have to give up his life except for some very select few, but or a case of Chil Hashem in front of 10 Jews, whatever it may be. But one does have to, prefer not to be over lo sase, and this is a lav haba michal sase. We spoke about before, Asher tassim lefneihem v'lo lefneiakum. So it's a lav haba michal sase. So why is a person allowed to take it to a secular court? So he'll lose money. So he'll lose money. I mean, even if you can't be Michal Shabbos, you can't shave with a razor, you can't eat treif, you can't put on shatnas, even if you lose all your money by not doing it. So why is this any different? And especially, you could just maybe add a little bit to the question, it's not even like somebody's forcing him directly. Like, it's not like somebody's threatening him and saying, if you don't go to secular court, I'm going to rob you of all your money. The person's just refusing to go to a Basin, and you feel that he owes you $100,000, and the only way to get your $100,000 is to take him to court. Okay, so it's almost like indirect. It's not even, he'd be very happy if you don't take him to court. So, and we find this concept a lot in Halacha, just very briefly. The famous Or Sameach that talks about, it says that if a person is being forced, Chamon al-Assan, to be Ovid Avodah Zarah, and his life is being threatened, he threatens his life saying, if you don't be Ovid Avodah Zarah, I'll kill you. So we know the halacha is that Yaharik Val Yavar, yes, the person has to give up his life. But let's say he doesn't. He buckles under the pressure, and he's Ovid Avodah Zarah. So the Rambam says he's not punished by Basin, he doesn't get Malkus, because he was it's an onus. It's an onus that you should have overcome. It's not an onus which permitted you to do what you did, but it's still an onus, so you putter from onshin. But yet there's another Rambam that says, let's say a person is deathly ill, and the only way to get a refuah is from a certain tree, that he goes to the doctor and he says, you need your refuah is from that specific tree, the sap of that tree is the only thing that will heal you, and that tree happens to be an asherah, which means it's a tree that's worshipped of Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to take refuah from the tree. You're not allowed to, even if it's a life or death situation. And if the person does, it says he's a nenash, basically will give him malchus for Avodah Zarah. So there are some Eichah, and many ask the question, what's the difference? In the first place, it says the guy's holding a gun to his head and says, be over to Verzar, I'll kill you. And he does it under the pressure. He's pater from Onish. And here, he's also this pressure of dying. He knows that this is, it's tried and tested. And, that the sap of this tree heals people with this illness. It's well documented in all the medical journals. And he does, and sure enough, he gets healed. So Basin's going to punish him. Why did they punish him? He did it under onus. So there's some Meir says, the difference is, nobody was forcing him to take the sap from the Avodah Zarah tree. The illness wasn't, in the case of the guy's saying, be Ovid Avodah Zarah, I'll kill you. That's a direct onus on be Ovid Avodah Zarah. That's the onus is to do that. So he buckled under pressure, he did it. It's called onus. But here, the illness isn't saying, you know, you better take that before I'm going to kill you. The illness is just killing him. He happens to know, or the doctor tells him, that the way to avoid it, the way to circumvent the illness, the way to outsmart the illness, or beat the illness, is to go do a vote of Avodah Zarah. So that's not cool that he was nenes directly. That was his decision and his, you know, his idea, or that this is a way to get out of it. So the onus isn't on it directly, so he's mamish punished by Beis Din for doing it. So over here also, the guy's not the other Jew who refused to go to Beis Din, he's not saying, you better go to Avodah, you know, our coast, or I'm going to, he's just, he'd be very happy if the guy drops the whole case. So why are you allowed to go to the coast? So the main answer to the question is that when a Beis Din sends somebody to our coast, what they're doing is they are employing the secular court as their agents to do what they can do. They can't do it because the other party refuses to come. And we don't have a system of forcing people to come to Beis Din now, other than various forms of pressure, but, you know, very mild forms of pressure. So since we can't force them, but the secular courts could. They could force them. They could, you know, all sorts of injunctions and whatever else, garnishing his wages or whatever they could do. They have the legal power to enforce their to force him to come. So and the consequences would be a lot greater if he doesn't. So with the base that is employing them basically now. There's even a shita. The Nesivas holds. He was one of the great achronim on Chosh Mishpat. Holds that Lemaise Beis Din can't send a guy to a non-Jewish court unless they're pretty convinced that he's right, that he has a case, and that you know, the justice is with him. Meaning they can't know for sure because the other party's not coming. But they hear from him. He presents his case and all his evidence and et cetera, et cetera. And if Beis Din, as much as possible, they're convinced. Now, you can never be fully convincing. You can never render a psak if the other party is not there. But as much as they could do, it seems to them, without the other party being present, it seems to them that the guy is for real and he has a real case. Then it seems to them, only then could they actually send him to a secular court. Many disagree with that and say it's not necessary, and it's not even so, usually, very often, not going to be so practical to do that. And Lemaisa, so that's, we don't require that. We don't, if Beis Din will send somebody, will allow somebody, will permit someone to go to secular court if the other party won't come to Beis Din, even if they don't know for sure that he's right. But still, the lumbus is that they're serving as the shlichim, as the agents. In a sense, it's almost like the whole idea that I said at the very first line, Eilah Mishpat HaMashiach says, Asher Tassim Lefneihem V'lo Lefnei Akum, and Lefneihem V'lo Lefnei Hedyotis, right? So what I said is, in a time when we have Mumchim and Smuchim, you're not even allowed to go in front of Hedyotos. So, nowadays we don't have, so, but how could you go in front of Hedyotos? So, the Ramban says already that the two drushes are not equal, meaning, Lo Lefnei Akum is an absolute Isser, except it says when Beis Din allows it, but otherwise Lefnei Akum is Isser even if both parties agree, where Lefnei Hedyotos is not. If, even at the time when they're all Mumchim, if both parties want to go in front of a Hedyot, they decide they want to go in front of a Jew who's going to judge them to the best of his ability, Al Pi Din Torah. But he's not a Mumchim, he doesn't have the smicha necessary, but they have confidence in him. They feel that he's a fair guy and he's doing to the best of his ability, he's using the Dinei Torah. They're allowed to choose to do that, just like they're allowed to choose to go in front of relatives, right? You can't force a person to go to a din Torah in front of your relative or his relative, or you can't bring an aide who's related, but if he's maskim, you can. So here too, Ramban says, in front of Hedyotos mutar. So nowadays, when we don't have mumchim, so memelu, all the only options Hedyotos, and the Hedyotos are doing the shlichus. That's what it says. The Gemara says, we're doing the shlichus, the Yotah is doing the shlichus of the mumchim who aren't here nowadays, who aren't around now. They're carrying out, and we only do things that are really absolutely necessary, meaning there are many types of Dine Torah, which won't happen nowadays. Things which, Lamashal Dine Knossos, a Knoss, which is a penalty for something which is not, a person is being penalized to pay more than he, this week's parasha, right, a person stole a ganav, and he has to pay kefal, and if he steals an animal, a shor v'seh, and he slaughters it or sells it, dalet v'hei, right, four times, five times, that's called Knoss. He has to pay more than the damage he did. None of that is done nowadays. We only do the basic thing that a person should get back his money, or not, you know, a person shouldn't be taken advantage of, and et cetera, or get back money that was stolen from him, the Karen, but not the... So, and we're doing it b'shlichus of the mumchim. So in the same sense, the poskim say, some say, that when the Beis Din sends you to a secular court, they're employing the secular judges to just do, because we can't do it now, we don't have the power to force the guys, so we're setting you up in our stead.
Is there any head to, if the litigant says, I will not go for Shulam Aleichem to Bezdin, without going to Bezdin and getting the heter, is there any heter to initiate the lawsuit?
Person at least has to get, at least has to discuss it with a knowledgeable Rav who's, you know, training these things again. To do it on his own, it definitely should not do. Definitely has to at least present it to a Rav, and if the Rav on his own feels that he could, then he could talk to it, but not totally his own. Some say, there's one other case though. Another case is where a person went to Beis Din. He took the case to Beis Din, and he won, and the other side just refuses to pay. Refuses to pay. It's a judgment against Shimon. Reuven takes Shimon to Beis Din. It's a judgment against Shimon, and Shimon just refusing to pay. And again, we don't have, you know, we don't have shoftim nowadays. That we have shoftim, maybe shoftim, yes, but not shoftim. So we can't force the guy. We could try to put some certain types of social pressure and communal pressure. It's often even that's not so simple to do and not so necessarily effective. So then some say in that case, he could go straight to our coast without even getting head to base. Then Lamaisa, it's always best and proper and safer. Forgive the Nesiva says at Nafgamina that if you go without Rishus Basin, even in a case like that, then and you win, you can't charge the person for your legal expenses. If you go with Rishus Basin, you could even charge him for the legal expenses. But even besides that, whenever you're dealing with in yonim like this, which are not daily in yonim and not something that a person, the average person necessarily is so knowledgeable and trained in, it's always good to go to a basin first and get a basin or at least, as I said, a person who is involved in these yonim, who's knowledgeable enough and reliable enough to give the person a heter. Yes.
So this arbitration clause will say that you have to go to court and get judgment. In other words, moving out of Shema and Dom's, right? So even arbitration. So you then go to court and get a judgment so that there's a legal method to collect. Would that be legal also?
Meaning with the usher, I'll be the entire thing?
I thought Basin does that.
Well, does that mean what? They send
so
person.
Moving 100%, there's no question, open shot case, move on the ballot. They now take that ruling, go to a court, and get a judgment. The judgment allows him to collect with the power.
Yeah, they'll do that when he refuses to pay without it. I mean,
of course, he should ask for it.
Absolutely. I mean, for example,
So Basin expects to move in to pay. That's it.
Absolutely. I mean, like much of the basin that I used to sit on, which was a state certified court of arbitration, and there was no automatic system of the judgment being brought to court. It did happen on occasion when people refused after, and even when they refused, we would first contact them, reach out to them, and try.
It's only last source.
Yeah, exactly. That's correct. Okay, now there's, so let's just talk briefly about some other cases. So we mentioned the heter to go to secular courts would be if the other person refuses to come in the first place and you get a heter basin, or if you won a case already and the person refuses to pay. There's a discussion in Poskim about what's called a chov barer, where the person owes money to, Shimon owes Reuven money, and he's not even denying it. He's just not paying. You can go to basin, he says, I owe you the money, but. Too bad. You know, he's just not refusing to pay. A chov bar, where there's absolutely no denial, no, he's not contending. So the Buchacher, I mentioned his name earlier, Buchacher Rav, says that you can take that to secular court because you're just basically going as an enforcement system. It's open and closed. He's not denying it. He's not, there's no dispute. And the Marsham brings down and he says, Kedaihu ha-das kadoshin, the Buchacher, lismo chalav. Lamaisa, though, it's not so simple. Others take issue with it because, first of all, this is a general problem. Once you go to court, there is a possibility of the court imposing other fines or other expenses on the person than he really owes. Like they might impose interest. Once you take it to court, they might charge the guy interest, which you absolutely can't, aren't entitled to. Or they might charge other things. Now, anytime a person does go to a secular court, like let's say in the cases we mentioned, if he does go to a secular court, he's still not allowed to take more than he's entitled to, al pi din Torah. you know, assuming that we know what that is, or we could be mavara what that is. Certainly not interest, which is gets into an isser on its own, a separate isser. But even more than that, if the court decides to award award the person more money than he's entitled to in Torah, he's not allowed to take it. And even if he gets it, he would have to return that to the other side. The fact that he had to go to court doesn't mean that, you know, that's it. Now we're in the hands of the court. Whatever they say, that's binding. That's not the case. They could only, to the extent that it's understood that it's believed to be correct, upheed in Torah. So that's one of the problems with even with the case of the chov bar. There might be other fees or fines or whatever that they may impose. And secondly, even if the person owes the money, but maybe he owes other people money also. And there's a certain system in the Torah. If a person owes multiple people money, who he has to pay first, and who's allowed to go after him, etc. So he may not deny he owes the money, but he also owes 10 other people money. And who says, well, maybe they have a shtar which was due earlier, and they have a right to collect earlier, and they're just not aware of this option or whatever it is, or maybe they may take away certain the person's assets or put a garnish away in a way that the din Torah wouldn't necessarily require. I mean, there's a halacha of misadron lebal chov. A person owes money, but it doesn't mean, and he agrees he owes the money, it doesn't mean you necessarily take the shirt off his back right away to make him pay it back. He's the misadron. The misadron, they'll take certain things from him, but leave him with other things, and the court might not necessarily follow that. So it's not so simple even then. So many say that even for chov bar, it's definitely better to first approach based in. Now, another situation, I just want to mention this just to be aware of, is when there's insurance claims involved. The person might have a claim against another Jew, but it's not simply Reuben against Shimon. It involves, let's say, for example, in the simplest case, an automobile accident where there are insurance companies involved, or medical malpractice. These are two of the most common cases where the person is going to be trying to collect insurance money. He doesn't necessarily even expect the other person will have the money, and the other person anyway is covered by insurance company. So there's a major discussion about that, whether the Isra of Arkos applies there altogether. An insurance company typically is not going to accept a judgment from a Beis Din, then they're not going to pay based on judgment. It has to be if it's something that, you know, is a legal battle, there'll have to be a decision from a court. And so there are some that say therefore they can take it to court. I don't want to say anything conclusive on this. I just want to bring this up and mention that there are a lot of considerations that have to be thought about. But this is definitely an area a person should consult with a knowledgeable dayan. There are many times when a person will be told that he can, when his insurance involved, he'll be told that. Well, another consideration is the fact that if he does take a person, even if he's really just suing the person's insurance company, or it's just the insurance company against insurance company, so it's not Jew against Jew altogether, but the person's premiums may go up as a result. And the question is that something that you have to take into consideration? There's a lot written about this. I'm not saying necessarily you do. It's a grumman. There's a lot of discussion about this, and it's just kedai to be aware and to give some thought to this, and to ask a shaila if anything of this comes up, to ask a shaila before taking action, but being aware that it could be had to do that. I just want to share with you also, there's the Chavetz Chaim in the Sefer Sfas Tumim, when he's talking there about some of the causes why people suffer financial difficulties, and why people sometimes are yorid min nichseim, they have money and they lose their money, they lose their wealth. So the Chavetz Chaim writes, v'zeh achas min hasibos, one of the reasons that causes, I'll just paraphrase mostly, that causes that people lose their money, ki b'avonaseinu harabim nisraba gezel v'chamas ba'olam, there's a lot of thievery, theft, going on, al yedei elu shaholchem bar kol shal begilulim, by people Jews taking other Jews to our coast, to umalshinim al chavreim umotziim mehem amonim, and they get money out of them in the secular court. And he says velibam bari lehem al zekulam, they don't even feel the slightest compunctions about what they're doing. They think that it's I'm entitled to this money. Look, the judge ruled that it's my money. Aval be'emes, says the Chavetz Chaim, zeh gezel gomor achrei she'ein chukei ha'Torah mishpateha shuritzon shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu maskim l'seh, if something which Beis Din would not grant to the person, then it's mamash gezel. If he's not entitled to the money LP Beis Din, then it's gezel gomor. So he says that, al kein, kalot shi yodeya ba'asmo, Shall Pia Torah Eino Emes Vitzedek Itan. So if the person knows that really he doesn't have a case in Beis Din, he would not win. Rakshu Yachal Lahotzi Meisrael Pimal Shinus, but Lefer Kod, if he can get the money, because Yivrach Mimaman Elu Kibarech Meneish. He should flee from such money like one who flees from a fire. Ki Yichlu Gamis Mamanu HaKosher. Not only will he not end up keeping this money, but it'll poison the rest of his money. If you get money like this through Gezel, through Arko, says the Chavos Chaim, it's going to be a bad effect on the rest of the money. This is one of the causes, he says, why people lose their money, even money that they have legitimately, but when they mix it with this bad stuff, it all spoils. Okay, just very briefly, just a couple of minutes. When a person does needs to go to a Beis Din, has a case, so it's always good to go to an established Beis Din, established functioning Beis Din, and it's proper to check into their reputation, try to find out, make some inquiries about the Beis Din's reputation. And by the way, one is not just limited to a local, necessarily to a local Beis Din. Nowadays, many Batei Din will do cases over Skype. Certainly if a person lives in a place where there is no local Beis Din and it's difficult for them to travel, the other party is not so willing to, or whatever. This has happened that when I was involved in this business, it was done a number of times, and the Gedolim have said, the Rebbe Eliashiv and others have said that it's mutter to do that. It's mutter to do a case on Skype, even has to be in front of the Bali Din, but that's a fulfillment of it, as long as you have everybody there. We've done cases where we were in Chicago, one party was in Eretz Yisrael, the other party was in some other city in the Midwest. They were both on Skype, and there were cases like that. Is it as good? Would we prefer it? No, of course. If you come to the Beis Din in person, of course, it's always better. No shaila, but it could be done that way, and their money many are authentic, reliable. But he didn't. That will do this. So that possibility exists. So it's kedai to find out where a place that has a reputation of being ehrlich and being honest and being professional and doing things in a manner that will satisfy and of course being not just ehrlich but being knowledgeable, being talmid chacham who are right to be in the position that they are and whose decision is something that we can have full confidence in. And typically, just end with this, that when a person goes to Beis Din, they'll be asked to sign a Shtar Birurin, which is basically an arbitration agreement, where it says that they're mekabel the ruling of the Beis Din, hein ledin, hein lepshara, which means that, the Gemara says, mitzvah lepso, it's proper even for the dayanim to try to arrive at a pshara, what's called a pshara krov ledin, not stam, okay, we have to make everybody happy as we can. Chas v'shalom, that's not the idea whatsoever. And I'll just tell you, though, I definitely sat on cases where it was 100-0. 100-0, the person came in with a tine and he walked out zero because none of the hearing the case and the mayan said this, so there was absolutely no merit to his case, so he got zero. So it's not like you walk in the base and you know right away you're not going to, there's no way you're going to get everything you want. Or It's not true. There is mitzvah. Very often, though, many of the cases are extremely complex, especially business cases, are very often very, very complex, and there's so many nuances and there's so many tainas and counter-tainas that very often it doesn't end up being 100-0. But and besides, it's because dayanim nowadays can't claim to be able b'chol ofen to get to the emes lamito shel dover, for sure this is exactly right, and so they using their Torah scholarship and using their elichkeit, etc., and going through the proper process, hopefully they will get as close as anyone could get. But that very often will involve a little bit of give and take. Just to end, if you look at the Balaturim on this week's parasha, in the very beginning, when it says Ve'ela Hamishpatim, he says the word Hamishpatim is no trikun. If I remember, it's only Hey Mem Shin Pei Tes Yud Mem Hadayin Mitzuva Sheyase Pshara Terem Yase Mishpat. It's right there in the first Eila Hamishpatim, right there. The Pshara is the right thing. So don't be turned off if it says there Pshara. And don't think it means that, I'm have to, if I walk in, I have to be Mocha. walk in there, just but make sure you do your homework before, and you walk in with full confidence, and you say, whatever will be, even if I walk out totally, you know, disappointed, but walk with an attitude that you're gonna that you have confidence in the people that the rabbanim you're sitting in front of, and whatever they say, that's the that's hopefully the Das Hashem, and certainly the Ratzon Hashem.
Something which is like a title issue, which doesn't can't really enforce that. Or a specific performance, a person is bound by a contract to sign over a title and it doesn't do it. How do they look at eviction? If someone didn't pay rent for 6 months and the landlord comes, he has to take it out. Really? I mean, they don't just look at it as like a function of in the secular court, it's just it's a judgment to remove the person.
I I
I'm getting a little sick and tired of this thing. I have to log into a computer to do it. I didn't go on a computer when I was eating for supper. I spent time with my kids. You want me to do it now? What?